Hi, I'm Micah Lewis, and I'm a program manager on the XAML team. And this is a pre-recorded session for Build that I'll be talking about navigation commanding for XAML. And so since you'll be watching this online, I want to give you a brief overview of some of the stuff that I'll be talking about so you have a good idea of what you'll be getting over the next 45 minutes to an hour, whether you want to skip ahead or come back later, watch it over again, or just go watch some other sessions and then later come back to this one. So I'll start by talking about navigation. We'll briefly touch on some patterns and what controls we have that will help if you want to implement some of those patterns. We'll be talking about commanding as well. And to really understand some of the changes that have happened in the commanding area, we'll look at some of the history of how it's evolved and then where we are now with Windows 10. And we'll look at what's new. And if you have an existing app and you're going to upgrade it, what you should consider, or if you're building a new app and there's just some things that you need to understand about the controls for commanding. So navigation patterns. To start, there's no required pattern. You can really use whatever pattern fits best for your app. We're not telling you have to do one thing or the other. We've looked at some of the patterns that we have on our platform and other platforms to try and make sure that if there's an experience that you need to provide, that you can do that. So some of the common patterns that we do see are a pivot pattern. If you're familiar with Windows Phone, you see this on a number of apps like the Mail app, where you have these individual pivots and you can swipe through them and move between the different pivot items. There's tabs, where you may just have a bar with some buttons and you can tap on the bar and quickly jump to an area of your app. There's the hub and spoke, where it's a nice big landing page area and you can quickly move between different areas of your app. There's master detail, where you, like the Mail app for example, you've got your folders and you can click on one of those and you can then see the details for that item. And then we've got hamburger, which is one that you may not have seen a lot on Windows, but it's prevalent on a number of other platforms. And this is a pattern that if it's the right experience for your app, you can use it. And we're going to talk briefly about how you might build that on Windows. And so some of the controls that are useful if you wanted to build some of these experiences or these navigation experiences are the hub control, the pivot, the app bar, and split view, which is new. So hub was previously converged on both Windows Phone and Windows, and we've updated it visually, so it's still present. You can use it for your app. Pivot was previously only available on the phone, and now it's there on Windows as well, so you can use a pivot and get an experience that spans from the large screen, from the small screen to the large screen. App bar was really only there on Windows before. It was often used at the top as a navigation menu. It's still there. You can continue to use it. We've made it available on the phone as well. Split view is the new control that we're going to talk about in more detail. So split view is this control that has really two content areas. You can see the pane on the left and the content area on the right. This is a control that's we think of as a building block. It's not just for navigation. It's not even tied into the navigation framework. It's a building block you can use to create a navigation experience, but you don't have to use it for navigation. If there's other places where you feel that split view is a control that will help you provide the experience that your app needs to provide, you can use the split view control. So as a basic building block, we don't have this built-in button that you might see on other frameworks. This hamburger button. There is an icon you can use. So if you do want to provide this experience and you don't want to create your own icon, you can use this icon from the Segoe MDL2 Assets font. Now, one quick note on this font. This is a new font that our assets team has provided. It's a great font. It's got all these icons that have been designed to fit on the M square, which makes it easier to use these as an asset in your app. So in the past, if you were familiar with the Segoe UI symbol font, there was a bunch of icons that you could choose from. Sometimes there were duplicate icons, and they had different sizes, and it wasn't clear which one was the right one. In this new font, the icons are easy to pick up, assign to an area. Let's say you use a text block and give it a font size of 24 or 32, and that icon is roughly going to fill that space. And so it's just much easier for you to use these across your app. Now, one thing you should understand is that this new font, the MDL2 Assets font, is not a one-to-one mapping with the Segoe UI symbol. So if you have a bunch of of places where you're using font icon and you don't specify the font family of Segoe UI symbol, if you just upgrade your app, then you may find some of these glyphs you were using before aren't there. I'll have a note about that later in the slide as well. If we look at split view, here's the API that's really relevant to split view. You know, as a controller, it inherits a lot of things, but these are the properties that you're most commonly going to want to use. So this is a demo of the split view control, where you can see I have the control here with the pane on the left, the content on the right. Up above, I have a number of controls that are bound to the different properties of the split view control. So to start, one thing you should understand is that it's right now in the inline mode. And what this means is that the pane is affecting the layout, so the content is sized to fit in whatever that remaining area is on the right side. Now, if I switch the placement of the pane to be on the right side, you just see it switch over. Now, I've also set the alpha channel on the background for my pane to be something that's semi-transparent. You can see what effect that will have as we switch to some of the other modes. Right now, there's nothing behind the pane, so it appears to be opaque. If I close this pane, you'll notice that the content resizes. So if you have some really rich content in here, this is not the mode you want to use if users are going to be opening it and closing it regularly, because it's going to cause your content to be laid out over and over again, which would affect the perf of your app. So let's switch to one of the other modes, compact inline. This is very similar to the inline mode, the difference being that you now have this compact area that you can put some UI as a bit of a hint to the user and also something they can interact with while it's still in the closed state. If it opens, you'll see again, it pushes that content over. The overlay mode, you'll now see that it's just as it says, it's an overlay. The pane is over top of the content when it's open. As it opens and closes, it does not affect the layout. We have this animation that plays with it. One thing to be aware of in this mode as well is that it does have some light dismiss behavior. So if I tap out or click outside of the pane, it closes. Compact overlay is very similar to the compact inline. Of course, being overlay, it's still going to overlay the rest of the content. So it does affect the layout by that compact amount. But when it opens and closes, you can see it just goes over top of the content. And again, you can switch the sides. You can change the size of that pane when it opens. So let's make it something bigger. And you can see it just slides right over. When it's in the compact size, if I wanted that compact hint to be larger, I could set that and have it start from a larger hint and then open to be the full width. So when we talk about how you might use this control, if you're trying to build a hamburger type experience, there's a few things you should consider. So one is the structure of how you want to set up your app. I'm going to show you what I've done in a demo app. And one of the things that you should see or you'll notice is that I have this top level app shell. It's really just a page that I've used. And on the content of the page, I have the split view control. Within the content of the split view, I've placed the frame. And then it's in there that I'm navigating between different pages. Why did I have App Shell as a page? It provides a nice design time experience. It takes into account the visible bounds, so it adjusts the content. So for example, if I wanted to run this exact same app on the phone, you'll know that on the phone that there's a system tray that has the clock and other things that appears at the top. And by default, that would go over your app. And if you by using a page, it takes that into account and it pushes it down so there's no visual collision there. For the menu items on my hamburger pane, I've styled radio buttons. I could have chosen to subclass them, but styling works. It's nice because they have a check state, and so as you select one of those items, that's the one that shows up as the user knows that's the area they're in of your app. And then you can see that I've put the frame as the content for the split view. And another thing to consider is where you put the hamburger button itself. You'll see what I've done in my app. So let me switch over and show you that now. So here we have the app, and you can see how I've set it up. I start off, and we have the app shell that is really taking the place of the frame. The app shell has a frame within it that I'm pulling out and hooking up to the different events for navigation failed, as well as when I call the navigate event. The sequence here is very similar to what you get with the basic app when you start it and load it by default from Visual Studio. Now, if we look at the app running, okay, here we can see the app running, and you can see on the left I've got this pane that I've set to be inline, and I've got a number of items that as I click on them, it will navigate to different areas of the app. Here's that same split view demo again. Now, what I've done is these buttons you can see, these are radio buttons, so as I check them, you can see which one is selected and where you are in the app. If I go on a page, go deeper into that area of the page, I can drill in, and then I can jump to other areas of the app and I see where I'm at any point. I've added my own back button to the app so that as I'm going back through the stack, it will highlight which area I'm in. And I've added these animations so that you get the smooth experience as you're transitioning from one area to the other. Now, as I resize the app itself, you'll see what happens. I'm going to switch down to the compact size where I can still navigate around. And then as I go even further, let's assume that this was on a phone size screen, it drops away entirely and I still have just the hamburger button where I can open the pane and then move quickly between different areas of my app. Now, what's happening here in the code, you can see on the shell itself, I've declared my split view. I've set a few properties. And up above, I'm using these adaptive triggers that at different breakpoints in the screen size will switch some of the properties. So you can see I'm setting the root split view display mode to be compact overlay when the size of the screen is between or is greater than 520 but less than 641. And as it gets down to the smaller size between 0 and 520, I'm just switching it to be in the overlay mode. Within the pane itself, I have my stack panel of radio buttons. You can see I've styled these so that they get that look and feel that's appropriate for this pattern. And then here I have the frame. On the frame itself, I've set a content transition. This gives me those nice animations as I'm transitioning from one page to the next page. And I've added this entrance navigation transition info. So as each page comes in, it's getting that nice animation that plays. Now, on the very first page, when I navigate, this is my app loading. We don't necessarily want that entrance animation to be playing. And so what I've done on the navigate method itself is you can see that I've given it the normal page that it should go to in the arguments, and I've used this extra parameter to say, suppress the navigation transition info on this first time. So when the app first loads, there's no animation. Okay, so now we're going to take a look at commanding. We'll do a bit of a deep dive on some of the things that have changed here in the commanding area. So first, let's look at what's happened and where we came from. So in Windows 8, we had the app bar, and then in 8.1, we introduced the command bar. And if you go back, there was a slide in the last build conference that you may have seen this, where we had Windows 8.1, we had Windows Phone 8.1, and what happened was there was a lot of convergence that happened. There was a lot of the APIs that were really the same, but there were still some things that were only on one platform or only on the other, and there's some areas where they were converged but had different behaviors. In the area of commanding, this was true. So what we had was mostly the same API, but we had separate binaries and we had some tailored behavior. More specifically, if we look at the app bar wasn't supported on the phone at all. Like, you couldn't use it. If you tried to, you get an exception at runtime. On Windows, the app bar was there. It responded to what we call edgy events. So if someone swiped from the top and bottom of the screen, it would appear. if they right-clicked or if they used the Windows Z keyboard shortcut. Now, when the keyboard appeared on screen, it would also always appear above that keyboard. And it was always horizontal. So if I had a device and I rotated it, that app bar would always appear at the logical bottom or top of the screen. Now, if we look at the command bar, which came later in 8.1, it was a subclass of app bar, so a lot of the same things on Windows it inherited and it had. But it was a little more structured. It had this set of primary commands that would appear on the right side, and it would have these secondary commands that appeared on the left side. Otherwise, you'd see very similar behaviors. It responded to the edgy gesture, it was above the keyboard, and it was more optimized for that experience on Windows 8. Now on the phone, we had that same API, but some different behavior. So you can see the primary commands were this set of commands that appeared at the top, and the set of secondary commands appeared in this menu that would come up as the user tapped on that dot, 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 you see. There was no edgy gesture support, so you couldn't swipe from the top or bottom of the screen and cause this to appear. Obviously, right-click on the phone wouldn't do anything. You couldn't really do it. And the API itself was wrapping the system's app bar. So it wasn't a pure XAML implementation. We were surfacing that system's the system app bar up through so that you could use it in your app. And part of that was that the implication was that the page top app bar was not supported. So you couldn't use that property to put an app bar at the top of the page on your app. And in terms of orientation, as you'd rotate the device, rather than always being at the logical bottom of the screen, the app bar would stick to that short edge, so it was always near those hardware buttons for the back and search and the go back to the start screen. Furthermore, on the phone, it had this minimized mode. So being a small screen, if you really wanted to maximize the space for the content of your app, you could put it in this minimized mode and just, it's still there for the user, but not in their face. When the keyboard appeared, if it was in portrait, the app bar would be below the keyboard. But as you rotate the device, again, because it remained to that side, you would just see it appear on the side adjacent to the keyboard. So now what do we have? We have one code base, one API, but we still have this tailored behavior when we're talking about the command bar. And what do I mean by that? So to give you a quick look, here again we have Windows Phone 8.1, the app bar experience on the left when it was opened, on the desktop, and then what do we see in Windows 10? You'll see a lot of similarities, but there's some differences that you should understand. So when we look at the API, here's that converged API. It was the same between 8.1 and 10. The set of secondary commands, you'll notice, has shifted. So before, these were the secondary commands. Now, in Windows 10, they appear here. Now I have two screenshots, and this is the exact same control. The only thing that's different between these two is the size of the window. So on a smaller window size, you'll see that menu snaps to be the full width, but on a larger screen, it sizes to the content that it contains. Some of the implications should be apparent for those of you who have a Windows 8.1 app. You'll see that what was previously the secondary commands has now moved into this menu. The behavior is still the same, that the command bar is in a closed state, and when it's opened, then it reveals all of its content, which would be both the labels for the primary commands as well as any secondary commands that are now there. Now, what about the app bar? The app bar, you could say, is exactly the same as the command bar, except that it doesn't have this menu. For the app bar, we're talking about just the bar. And the app bar is really an area where you host whatever custom content you want to the left of this dot, dot, dot. Now, this button itself is there and present because users need a way to interact with this control. So if we look at the app bar for a moment, by default in Windows 10, it's going to be visible in a minimal size. In the past, it was hidden and someone had to do an edgy gesture to cause it to appear, or programmatically you'd invoke it. Because that gesture is no longer there for Windows 10 apps, we provide it in this minimal size by default, and making it easy for your app to move forward so that that experience is still very similar. Users can get to the commands of your app. It also has this dot, dot, dot button, which is basically the replacement for that gesture. And one of the things that is still true for the app bar is that if someone does a right click and it's not handled elsewhere in your app, then it'll cause the app bar to appear. When you have an app bar that's at the top or bottom of the screen on a page, and that page is really the root of your app, so it also affects the visible bounds when it's at the root. So if you have a frame and a page and you're using a top or bottom app bar, what's new for Windows 10 that was previously there on the phone is that the content of your page will be pushed up or down slightly based on the size of that app bar when it's in that closed state of minimal. We've also added these APIs, opening and closing. Now, this API, the closed display mode I've mentioned here, was previously available only on the phone, and it's now converged, it's present for the app bar, whether you're using it on Windows, or phone, or other devices. So let me show you a quick demo of the app bar. And we're gonna start by looking at a Windows 8.1 app. Okay, so here's a Windows 10 app that was upgraded from a blank Windows 8 app, and all it has is this top app bar and a bottom app bar, and you can see inside I have basically the same app bar I've copied with just some controls on the left and right side so that when it runs you get that experience that you may be familiar with on Windows 10. So here you can see the app. By default, I now have this minimal app bar on both the top and the bottom. In Windows 8, those would have been off the screen entirely. If I right click, you see they both open. But I could also just click on each of these. I could click anywhere on the bar or the More button to cause it to open and close. So now let's talk about the command bar. The command bar, as I said before, is really the app bar plus more. Instead of being a minimal size by default, it's compact. So you'll see a hint, you'll see the icons for those primary commands, but you won't get the labels until you open it. It doesn't respond to right click. This is a change that we've made so that the command bar gives back the right click for you to use. We encourage you to use other things where it's appropriate, for example, a context menu. Users are familiar with that pattern. You can certainly use it in your app. The command bar, we've also given it the ability to host custom content. So in the past, it was really limited. You got the app bar button, the toggle button, or the separator, and that was pretty much it. But now you can put whatever you want inside the command bar, and I'll show you where that goes. The command bar has this menu of commands that's different than the app bar. Now on the phone, it already had this before, but for Windows, that's new. And as you saw, those commands have moved. Another thing to be aware of is that the implementation is 100% XAML. So on phone, where we were previously wrapping the system's app bar, now it's all XAML. So there may have been some weird issues or things that you ran into, and those should all be gone. Now being one control, we still wanted to give this tailored experience. And that's why you'll see that based on the window size, that menu may be going to the full screen size, or it may be just sizing to the content. Another thing to note with the command bar is that it's no longer limited to just being the top or the bottom of your screen. You can now place it inline in your page, and you'll see what I mean. Here we look at one of the apps, the People app, and on the desktop, you can see that they have two command bars. They have this one in the pane over here, and they have one over to the right side. When they go down to a mobile device, they drop down to one. Now, these do not have to be using the page top or bottom app bar properties. These could be just placed inline adjacent to other content. There's a lot more flexibility. You should know that having it inline, it will affect the layout, but only for that closed size. Once you tap that More button to open it, it will not cause the rest of your UI to move around. You don't have to do anything special to get that behavior. It's just built into the control. So if we look at the API, here's what's really new for the command bar. The part that's gray was stuff that was converged before. This is now what we have. The closed display mode, it's present everywhere. You can set it to one of these modes, whether that's hidden, the minimal, or compact. And we've added an opening and closing property. So if you need to take some action before it opens, then you have a way to hook into that. We have this command bar content property. This is a property that previously existed, but didn't do anything. Now when you set content, that content will appear to the left of the primary commands. So if you have no primary commands and you put stuff in the content, it's equivalent to the app bar. You can put whatever you need inside that area. Now, because it supports all three of these, you can combine them as best meets the needs of your app. And then last of all, we have this overflow presenter style. That allows you to get at this menu here and do some things like change the background color if you need to. So let's take a quick look at a demo. Okay, so here I have the app that you saw earlier, and we're just going to look at the command bar for a moment. I have a number of command bars that I've placed in the page here. These are all inline. Now, as I mentioned, when they open, they don't affect the layout of other controls. So here I have a button, the command bar itself, and a toggle switch that are in a stack panel. When I open it, you'll notice that it goes over the button, but doesn't cause it to shift around. Here at the bottom, you can still place them, align them top or bottom as you see fit. Having it inline makes it easy for you to move around if you need to make your app more adaptive. And you still get this great experience. Now, notice that the menu is sizing to the content. If this window size were much smaller, let's say it was a phone size screen, then that menu when it opens would span the full width, and it's more optimized for someone who's holding the device with their hand. They can just touch easily on those different commands. Now, on the app bar itself, you can see we've got a toggle button that appears in the menu, so it's indicated by the check mark. We can have flyouts attached to the buttons if you have more commands that you need to surface to the user. And you can see when buttons can be toggled, that's indicated by the accent color. So if we look at the code, here we can see one of the command bars and where I'm setting the presenter style. I'm doing style, I'm targeting that command bar overflow presenter, and I'm just setting the background to be a light gray. So if we go back to the app, you can see which one that is. That's this one here. Now another thing to note is the behavior of this menu. It's going up over everything else when it opens. And again, it's sizing to the content. So I obviously placed it in not a great spot being here on the left side. But if we drop this down so that the screen size is smaller, you'll see that if there's not enough space on the one side, it switches so it aligns to the left edge. If you need to override some things, again, like the color, maybe the width, you can get to that through this command bar overflow presenter. So just to recap, this is the command bar behavior where you notice the layout was only affected by the size of when in the closed state. The menu is based on the size of the window. At less than or equal to 480, it sizes to be the full size of the window, optimized for the small screen devices. At greater than 480, it's going to size to the content. Now, you may not have seen this clearly in the demo, but those commands don't automatically move. So as you're resizing the window, those commands will remain, but you can programmatically move them if you need to from being a primary command to a secondary command, and the right visual change will happen for you. So when we look at which one do you use, app bar versus the command bar, use the command bar. The app bar, we've done work to try and ease the transition for people who have these legacy apps and you're trying to update them to work well for Windows 10. So the behavior is there. As much as possible, we've tried to keep it the same as it was with some minimal changes. We encourage you though to switch to the command bar. It provides the capabilities, the flexibility that I think you'll need for your app and provides you with additional options. Now, when you're upgrading your app, some of the things you should consider. First, again, recommend you move to the command bar. It's not going to respond to that right click automatically, so if that's something your users have become accustomed to, then you may need to add that functionality yourself. When the keyboard appears on the screen, the command bar is not going to it's not going to move up with the keyboard unless you have set it as that page bottom app bar property. Now, question to ask is if that's critical for your app. Do you need to have your commands visible while the keyboard is there? If you consider scenarios where, like on a mobile device, you have it in landscape and the user's trying to type, that keyboard's already consuming quite a bit of space. And having those commands also present, how much is that helping the user? So if you need to, you can hide it or just not show it, put it in the minimal size as well. Other things to be aware of, the app bar toggle button and the app bar button has a different size than it did before. They were different between phone and Windows. They're now a converged size. It's closer to the phone size. So if you have an app that's localized, then just be aware that that may affect where those words are going to wrap. You can use a soft hyphen character in the string that will act as a hint to indicate where that word should break. And if you really need the button to be larger, we recommend you set the min width and not the width. And the reason being that if you want to start moving those commands from the primary commands to the secondary commands, using min width is going to give you the right behavior. Using width is not going to give you the experience that your users really want to see. Now, I mentioned much earlier about this new font, the Segoia MDL2 Assets font. The symbol icon and font icon now use that font by default. And so if you're using font icon and you didn't set the font family specifically, then when you upgrade, you may find that there's a number of places where there's no glyph or you get the blank rectangle. Now symbol icon, those will just move right forward. So as you upgrade your app, it's going to switch and you're going to get the new look and feel of the icons. Now those icons themselves and the buttons, they have a smaller space. It's now a 20 by 20 box. So if you're using something like a path icon on Windows, which assumed a 40 by 40, you may find that now your icon's getting clipped. So one of the things you can do is just take that path icon and you can assign it as the content of the button and wrap that in a view box. And it won't be the same size, but at least you won't get your icon being clipped. So I'd like to thank you for watching. I hope this has been informative. There'll be some sessions that will be done live at Build that you should definitely go check out. They're related to some of the concepts I've talked about here. Jeff Arnold and Carmen will be giving a talk talking about the user experience, the different models, the patterns, and the controls, and things you should consider. To learn more about navigation and windowing in Windows 10 apps, you should definitely go see this talk from Robert. And if you have a legacy app and you need to upgrade it, Sam Jarwan's going to talk more about that and what it means when you're moving from whether it's Silverlight or Windows 8.1 to be a Windows 10 UAP app. And then last of all, when you start thinking about building an app that's going to scale across all these different screen sizes, there's a number of things you have to think about. And Tim Heuer and Harini are going to give a talk on that you should definitely go and check out. Again, thanks for watching. I look forward to getting your feedback and your comments and answering any questions that you may have.